Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 29th of Tammuz. Thank you very much for joining us. It occurred to me, since I recorded the previous shiur, that I have not always been careful to point out that we do not find necessarily actual halakhic conclusions in our discussions, that we are taking journeys through tshuvot, and these are all authoritative decisors. So if one lived in their time, it went to them for an answer, and they gave this answer, then one could easily follow the answers that we're discussing here. But these are tshuvot that exist within the flow of halakhic history, within the flow of halakhic discussion, and therefore on many of these issues it could be that the common Jewish practice has become otherwise, and in those situations one would have to follow the ordinary Orthodox Jewish practice. All of these decisors are authorities of their own, but they're not authorities who, over the course of, you know, over the distance of decades or centuries, are necessarily authoritative, unless it's true that the consensus of Orthodox Jewish authorities have accepted them. So we're doing this as a not intellectual exercise, not academic exercise, but as a piece of Torah learning, of reminding ourselves of pieces of Jewish halakhic history, many of which still do apply today in the ways that we learn them, and some of which not necessarily. And today's is not going to be anything like that. I just realized I really should sort of put out that caveat, that disclaimer, in the sense that I don't think that I'm necessarily, that I know that I'm not paskening or ruling in any of these discussions. We are instead, I hope, getting to meet and getting to know decisors from, great decisors from our past, and doing so in what I hope is an entertaining way, in terms of spending each calendar day reminding ourselves of the Jewish calendar, becoming somewhat more in flow with the Jewish calendar by doing this on the days, on the Hebrew days, on the Jewish days when they were written, and also getting to know more of the spread of halacha in ways that we don't necessarily always encounter. This is a tshuva from the 29th of Tammuz. It's written by the Bach. We've seen the Bach before the Bach, although I find these tshuvot, I don't go in order all the time. So this is a tshuva that I found a while back. So when I found that, I was excited to find a Bach. But we've seen a Bach before, but the Bach was Rav Yoel Sirkis. It's called Bach because his commentary on the tour was called Bayit Chadash. And he has tshuvot, and every so often he puts a date on his tshuvot, and this is from the 29th of Tammuz. And it was, he was written a letter about a get that was given in the ear Tiktin. Right? That's the way they pronounce it. We today call it Tikachin. It's a village in the Bialystok province of northeastern Poland. So the Bach gets a letter about it from some other Rav who's not the Rav in the town, and he, the other person writing the letter, thinks that a get, a divorce, bill of Jewish divorce that was written in this year, Tiktin, the man writing the get had made three important errors that he thought disqualified the get. I have said before, and I'll say again, I don't always or don't often go into getting issues. I try to avoid them just because they overwhelm the response to literature. Of course, I'm trying to get a representative sample. That should then theoretically mean that I should take them whenever I find them. I just don't, in the name of interest. But here, there were a couple of issues that I thought were worthy enough to step into. I mean, by worthy, I mean interesting to us, that we will gain from them in an immediate way that will be valuable, that I thought that was worth doing it. And one of the central issues, as we've seen together before, is names and the writing of names. So that could be in people's names. As we saw, Rav Cook had a discussion of the writings of names. In this case, it was going to be about other issues in the get, in terms of names of one of issues. One thing is, the man had written Tiktin, the Midkarya Tikachin, that is known as Tikachin, and the reason that this man is complaining is that he looked and he checked and he never found another get, another bill of divorce that written before this. He calls it a get yashan, an old get. So they're writing in the late 1500s, early 1600s is when this tshuva is being written, and they're talking about, this is from Shin Tzadi Aleph, so that would be 1631. Is when they're writing it. They're talking about old Gittin, right? They have a sense of hundreds of years of history in this place. So he checked all the old Gittin of Tikachin, and he looked into the name of the city, and he found that the non-Jews write it as Tikachin, but the Jews don't. That's the reason why the man wrote it. But this man is complaining, says nobody ever wrote it that way. Nobody ever says it's Tikachin. Jews always refer to it as Tikdin. He also wrote, the man writing the get, had also written the Yadva al-Nehar Narva Velnahar Strushka, right? It was sitting on two rivers, Narva and Strushka, and made Ma'ayanot, and sits by well water. So this is part of writing a get. You have to identify the place where the get is written extremely carefully. This is a big halachic issue in many, many places, because that's the way the Gemara says one writes a get. You describe it by its nearby rivers and by other water sources. And I actually saw tshuva many years ago where Rav Nachum Rabinovich consulted with Rav Henkin Alav HaShalom about how to write a get in Charleston and the names of the rivers, and nobody had ever written get in Charleston before, so he wanted to check which rivers and how to write the names of the rivers, because until then people had gone to other cities to get a get because people were uncomfortable with deciding on their own how to write a get in a new place. So writing a get in a place was an important issue because of these kinds of questions. So this Rav had written Tikhtin, that's also called Tikhachin, which the man complaining doesn't think was right. He also wrote the names of these two rivers and that it was sitting on May Mayanot. And this man who's complaining, he says, you shouldn't have mentioned Strushka. And he had a whole reason why he shouldn't mention Strushka. Whereas the man who wrote the get said, no, the Strushka is part of the town because it runs behind the houses in the town, and horses and other animals drink from the Strushka River. And also, when it comes time for laundry, they take that water and they heat it up in the winter in order to use it. So he therefore thought it. In other words, I think the other man had said, well, it's not really sitting on the Strushka because the Strushka runs behind the town. And this, the man who wrote the get, the rabbi who wrote the get, who was putting together the Masader HaGet, had said, but it's a river that's used in the town, and therefore it should be part of the identification of the location in order for the get to be valid. And then one war complaint that he had, there was, he should have written, Almei Be'erot, not Mei Mayanot. Because he thinks that most people use, I'm sorry, so Be'erot are wells and Mayanot are springs. When I said well water for, I should have said spring water. So the Masader again had just mentioned spring water, and the man complaining says that he thinks it should have been written Mei Be'erot, well water. So these are issues that importantly sound, that are important to notice because they sound very technical, and yet they are also extremely significant for the writing of a get and for a get to be valid. And if a get is not valid, let's remember halakhically, then the divorce has not occurred, and if the divorce has not occurred, the woman is still married, and if she marries somebody else, she is then having an adulterous affair. These are significant halakhic issues, and it's an experience of halakha that those who aren't involved in its technical application always realize, but should be sitting there in the background for us. Unless something is done in a halakhically valid way, it's invalid. So the fact that a woman and a man, and let's say a man and a woman who used to be married to each other, sincerely recognize, let's say there's no bitterness, and they recognize it's time to get divorced, and they decide to split up, and they're getting divorced for whatever reasons. I'm not sure that would have been true in the early 1600s, but let's say it was, and they go to a Rav to give them a get, and the Rav gives them a get, and they part company as amicably as one can in these situations, and the woman goes off to get married, and she marries somebody else, and it turns out her get is invalid. She has just had an adulterous affair unwittingly, unintentionally, but she's done so, and any children they would have would be mamzerim, even though there's no direct culpability that anybody would apply to her. So that's the way in which these, and there are other situations where that's true as well, where the technical halacha becomes extremely and extraordinarily important, because aside from the question of what people intend and what people are trying to do, there's also what takes actual effect. So this man complaining to the Bach is complaining about these issues. The Bach is unhappy. He says, I think that Chazal would not be, the Torah figures, Torah authorities would not be happy with you that you're complaining about this get, because it's very clear, he says, that there is never a get before in this city, and Chachamim would get together to discuss it. He says, I think that it would be important, it would be correct to write both names in the city, and that's what other communities do. Whenever there's a difference between the way the Jews refer to a city and the way the non-Jews refer to a city, then you write both in the get. So why he's unhappy with the complaints, we'll see as the tshuva goes on. But his first point is, the man said, all Jews refer to this place as Tikhtin. I've seen old Gittin, and in the old Gittin, they only write Tikhtin. So this man all of a sudden comes along, he writes a get, it says Tikhtin, that's also known as Tikhachin, and that's terrible. And the Bach says, I don't think it's terrible. Bach says, if we got together and had a rabbinic convocation and to discuss how to write a get in the city, I think we would have included both. And you'll notice that the Beit Yosef wrote in his commentary on the Torah that if a city or a river have two names, then when there's a divorce in that city, you should write the central name, and then you write the other name, and you write it, and you should get all the names you can. And the reason why you want to get as many names as you can into the get, if you say mitkaria with it, is because you want to have as good an identification as you can. Now, it is true that Maharik had written in a tshuva to Rav Avigdor that in situations like this, if somebody wrote for only one of the two names, so that's, as long as both names are known, that's can be acceptable if you do it that way. If you write that one name and you write Kol Shum V'Chanicha and any other name that's known, that's another, it can be valid that way, but L'Chadchila, it's preferable, and somebody who's thinking about how to do it from the start, it's preferable to write both names if they're known by that name. So here, even though the earlier people who wrote the Gittin and Tikkun had just written Tikkun, because they didn't think in earlier times, the Bach says, so in the 1600s, in earlier times, I don't know, the 1500s, the 1400s, the earlier times, they didn't realize or they didn't know that the non-Jews had another way to refer to the town, or they might have thought that Tikkun was the more common name, and therefore they didn't think they had to include the name Tikkachin, that nobody really thought about it, because it was only a minority. So then when this man came along, and he writes Tikkachin, so here was the complaining rabbi's concern, was that he said, it looks like this man is saying that earlier Gittin were invalid. Right? So by him, it becomes a problem in some situations. Let's say we come along and we are frummer. We think we're better than the previous generations. So in many cases, it's just impolite. But in this situation, it almost casts aspersions on the earlier Gittin. They didn't write the second name, the Tikkachin name, and maybe that causes problems in the get. Maybe those Gittin weren't as fully valid as they should have been, etc. So the Bach says, there's no worry about that, because first of all, we have a psak that says, even if you only write one name, as we said before with the Maharik, even if you only have one name, I'm sorry, I think it might have been that Rav Avigdor wrote to the Maharik that even if you only have one name, either way around, but they had agreed that if you only have one name, that it's b'di'evet, okay, it's b'di'evet kasher, since people know both names. So, and then also it could be that in earlier times people were reading both names, we just don't have those Gittin anymore, those Gittins have been lost, or that after a while, or in earlier times the name Tikkachin wasn't known yet, it wasn't a name that people used, it, and it's more recent times that people have used that name. That would be another way that the writing of a get could change, right? Let's suppose you have a city that's known as one thing for a while, and then another name rises in popularity over the course of a century or two, and all of a sudden you have two names. So writing a get the way the city is known now would not be saying anything about the validity of Gittin that were written beforehand, and therefore he doesn't think it's a problem here. So in fact, the Bach says, and this is almost the opposite of what the complaining rabbi had wanted to have happen, in fact, from now on, he's pretty sure that should mean that everybody who writes a get in this town needs to write both names, as this rabbi had done, write Tikkatin, Mitkarya Tikkachin, the name Tikkun that's known as Tikkachin, as this man did, because it's an extra level of care that he has inserted into the get writing process, and that's always for the good, to make sure that things go better, because now if somebody else comes along and writes only Tikkun and he just writes it that way on purpose, and then he will be being motzi la'az on this get. He will be implying that there's something wrong with this get, which includes the words Mitkarya Tikkachin. And therefore, he says, that he thinks the community of Tikkun need to write it down in their communal notebook, which was the repository of all of their communal customs and their communal ideas. They should write in the name of the Bach that in the future they have to make sure to write Tikkun, Dimitkarya Tikkachin, Tikkun, which is known as Tikkachin, so that nobody comes to see this get that now we're discussing right now and think there's a problem with it. That's issue number one. The name Tikkun. Then what about the rivers? So the man who had put together the get, the Mesander had written Narva, Nahar Narva, the river Narva, and the river Strushka. The complaint was that Strushka isn't part of the city, and therefore shouldn't have been included. The Bach says, I don't know what you mean, that since this river, the Bach is saying, since this river is behind the houses and people use them, they have their animals feed, they drink this water, and they launder their clothing in this water, which, by the way, is a problem for water contamination and can lead to illness and stuff like that. So we should make sure to use clean water and separate our waters very carefully. But back then, this is what they're doing. The Bach says, obviously, you have to write it in again. Because even, I think the other man was saying that it's not really part of the river, the part of the town. The town's borders are the ends of the houses and the backyards of houses, maybe. And then when the backyards end, that's the end of town. And so the Bach says, I don't understand what you're talking about. If they're using this river as part of the town, then it's obviously part of the town, and so you have to write it at the get. And the Kolbo says it, and the Gaon Mordechai says it, the Gaon Baimani says it, and everybody says, gets it from a smack, that if a city has two or three rivers, you have to write the names of all two of all those rivers. So that's one of the things that could be complications in other getin, is that you have to figure out which rivers count and which rivers don't count. But in this case, he says, obviously it's very clear. They make use of the river as part of the town, therefore it's clearly got to be true that they have to include the river in the get. As for the question of writing mei ma'i, you know, it's spring water as opposed to mei be'erot, when you have other sources that say you write mei be'erot, he says it's true. I found sources that say that we prefer to write mei be'erot, but he says it would be strange if you're going to use both ma'ayinot and be'erot, both well water, spring water and well water. Why wouldn't you write both in the get? Why would you only write well water? And so in this Haggah, it said, well, maybe that's in a place where essentially they used well water. Maybe occasionally they used some spring water, but fundamentally used well water. But we, the Bach says, will do what the Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Kuf Chav Chet, we will see, which is that a city that gets its water from wells, they write Al Mei Mei Rot. And then he adds, the Shulchan Aruch writes, if they also get from springs, then you write Mei Mayinot. So the Bach says he thinks that what the Shulchan Aruch means is that their central sources of water are well water, and if they also happen to use spring water, even though most of their water is from well water, then they would write both. But since springs are older than wells, right? Springs are natural and wells are dug by human beings, then he thinks that you write it more if you have that than you would write well water, which is made by people. So in this town, they didn't really use wells very much. They mostly used springs, and therefore he's going to say that he thinks even though they get some of the use out of well water, and this man didn't mention well water, it's no reason to complain about the get. Because also, by the way, all well water is actually in some sense spring water, because you're digging down until you find a spring, and then you're using the well to get out of that spring, out of that naturally occurring water, or that aquifer underground, or whatever it is you're reaching down for. So therefore, he thinks that having written Mei Mayanot should be acceptable as well, even if some of it is actually well water. So the only case he thinks where you'd have to say well water is when they only use wells and there's no springs at all, then he thinks you wrote Mei Mayanot, you'd have a problem, as there are in certain situations. So what all the more so, he ends by saying, is that it's certainly not room to complain about a get that's already been given. Meaning, it'd be one thing if this question is being lodged with the Bach before the get has been delivered, and these two rabbis are part of the writing of the get, and they're having an argument how to write the get, that'd be one time to have a kind of discussion about halakhic issues and how one writes a get. But now that the get has already been given, and he is, by complaining about it, creating perhaps the implication that people would say that this woman is improperly divorced, that can have huge ramifications. People don't always, when they're spreading rumors, they're not always as careful as they should be about making sure the rumors are true. So if word gets out that this man is complaining about the get, then you can easily imagine people, not imagine in a good way, but you can imagine people saying, oh, I heard the get wasn't actually good. And then if this poor woman gets married again to somebody, you can imagine people, wags, people who, cynics, scoffers, whoever, people who don't bother to check out the truth, they could say, oh, you know, it's such a scandal. Who knows if she's really divorced? She was supposed to get a second divorce. Right, so these are big problems. And so the Bach is unhappy with the man. He says, you're going to have to pay, meaning, not to me, but Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem is going to extract punishment from you, perhaps, because people will learn from this letter and from this discussion. And before the man wrote it to the Bach, he may have discussed it to other people too, to start casting aspersions on Gittin. And when Gittin are given in the proper way, we're not supposed to do that because of the terrible things that come out from it. And he says, there's a Chayr Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, actually, we all know Tam had a cherim. A cherim is where he publishes the idea that anybody who does X action should be excommunicated, should be excluded from the community until they repent from their action. And one of them was to be motzi la'azal aget. One of them was to to imply or to say in public that a get is invalid when it's really valid. So that's what Rabbi Tab did. Bach is saying, you, by writing this letter to me complaining about this, are running afoul of this, and you should recognize that you've done something very wrong here, and it's a big problem. But he throws out, he puts out there, as we always should, if you do tshuva for this, if you recognize you did the wrong thing, and you rectify the wrongs that you did, then you should get brachot, and I hope everything will be good for you. And he closes with that idea for the 29th of Tammuz of Shin Tzadi Aleph of 1631. Since that was a relatively brief tshuva, I have another very brief tshuva, and it won't take us our full 10 minutes that we have left for our half hour that we usually spend together, but in Kol Mivaser, Aleph Pei Gimel, in the response of Rav Shulam Rath, who was an important Rav, especially at the beginning of the State of Israel, and answered many questions that came up in terms of the beginnings of the State of Israel, there's a tshuva from the 29th of Tammuz on Tav Shin Yud Gimel of 1953, and this is about the question of whether the law in Israel should include the ability to force people to give gin. Right? Unfortunately, there are situations where men refuse to give gin, even in marriages that are long dead and aren't going to get back together. It's just a way either to be spiteful, unfortunately, in many cases, or to extract money, which isn't necessarily all that much better, except that in those situations, sometimes there's a resolution even without the authorities stepping in. But either way, so one of the early ideas in the early State of Israel was we can put people into jail, we can imprison people for a set period of time, and they can know they're going to jail for X period of time unless they give the get. So Rav Shulam Roth was weighing in on this, and he is a man who is very in favor of the State of Israel and is a proponent of it. So his reaction here is not going to have to do with anything with being Zionist or non-Zionist, but he doesn't think that he is unhappy with this idea. It was known that Rav Yitzchak Cohen Spector and Shutein Yitzchak had said you could use certain kinds of force, and even you might be able to use authorities to apply that force, at least with the Eved. But Rav Shulam Rath says in Kol Mivaser, right, first volume, Pei Gimel, response of 83, he had said, but to make a law about it, they're causing this to apply to a sfeik sfeika. The reason why the Rav Yitzchak Cohen Inspector said it was okay was there was a sfeik sfeika. It was a double doubt as to whether there's a problem with this. It's a double doubt, it should be okay. But to create a situation where we're going to use that double doubt in order to, that Rav Shulam Roth was a problem, and therefore he thought it shouldn't be done, and therefore also when the Rambam says that if it's Jewish authorities who do the coercion, so there, even if it's wrong, it's only the Rabbanan, it's an invalid get at a rabbinic level, and therefore people were saying, well, it's the suffix the Rabbanan, it might be valid, it might not be valid, on a Rabbanan level, we should be allowed to go ahead with it. Rav Shulam Roth says you can't on purpose create a doubt the Rabbanan. As the Magen Avraham says in Yeridah, and therefore he thinks it's a problem. So even if the law is limited, that the Beit Din will write, the halachic court will write in their Pesak Din to say, and this person should be put in prison, and they'll say it explicitly. So you might say, therefore, that the Beit Din is the right to do this. The Beit Din knows when it's appropriate or not, and therefore there won't be a wrongly coerced get, because that's unfortunately, and I said unfortunately because it gets in the way of securing gittin in times when we think that gittin should be secured. One of the things that gets in the way of it is the worry about a get meuseh. And the halacha is that if a husband is improperly forced to deliver a get, to write a get to his wife and deliver it, that get is not valid. So it's not that we don't want to force the husband, it's that halachically, in many cases, it's unable to be effective. And that's where we get into problems. So here, you might have said, some people were saying, well, if the Beit Din says force him, so that's the Beit Din's decision, the Beit Din does have the right to force get in certain situations, and therefore won't be a get muset. So Rav Shulam Roth says he is uncomfortable with this. First of all, with the term of imprisonment was 5 years or 3 years. He says he doesn't know any halachos that allow for imprisonment. That's a good discussion for another time, is to think about the fact that halacha doesn't really speak about prison. And therefore, when one uses prison in halacha context, how does that count in halacha, since halacha doesn't seem to recognize the whole idea of imprisonment? And therefore, he thinks that that's a problem in terms of getting me'usa, because the Beit Din might not have the right to call for imprisonment. So once they do it, so we do have some imprisonment, halacha, he says. We have holding people in prison or in just holding on to them at a time when we're trying to guard them or we're trying to force them to do something else. But that's not 3 to 5 years. That's while a situation is unfolding. So let's say, for example, one person hits another person and that person, the victim, is bedridden now from his wounds and we don't know if they're going to die or not. So the person who beat the person, the assaulter, might need to be punished. So there, the Gemara in Ketubot says, we'll hold on to that person to make sure they don't run away until the situation resolves itself, until the victim either passes away or gets better. If the person gets better, then it's a financial issue. We have to hold on to the perpetrator, and therefore we will. So that's a form of imprisonment, Shlomo Roth says. It's true. And when people are under capital, are being on trial for a capital crime, right? So there too, we will hold them in prison until the court case is over. Sometimes we'll put people into kippah if they've violated the Torah in enough ways. There's a whole process for putting them in a thing called kippah, which is a very small, narrow imprisonment, but that's a form of killing them, really. So Shlomo Roth says that one example would be if somebody kills somebody and you have two witnesses, but there was no warning. So the court can't put the person to death because there was no warning. There was no hatra'ah. As Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, we put them into kippah, but Shlomo Roth says we only use kippah for very specific situations, and he says it's for ho-regel ha-nefesh, for somebody who kills somebody else without hatra'ah, but not other capital crimes, or let's say somebody goes to an ir miklat, if they have to go to a city of refuge, which is sort of imprisonment because they can't leave that city, but that's a very specific example delimited by the Torah in a specific way. And therefore, Roth says that he's uncomfortable with the whole idea of imprisonment being used in halachic ways. There's a little bit more to the tshuva, but I had said I wasn't going to use up all my time, and now I realize that I'm about to get to use up my time, so to finish at least 2 or 3 minutes early today, because I said I wasn't going to use up all my time, I'll close here. What you say is that he was very uncomfortable with the idea that the government would put somebody in prison for a fixed term as part of the process of trying to get out of them. He thinks that would be a problem, and that, unfortunately, that could lead to coerced gittin, which would be a problem. So, two issues with writing gittin, one from the 1600s, one from the 1900s, one about the writing of names, the technical writing issues, which can be complicated and difficult in many situations, and the other about getting husbands to give gittin, which sadly can also be technical, complicated in many situations. We can hope, A, that people don't get divorced, that people have happy marriages, and they find their way together, but even when marriages, unfortunately, some percentage of marriages seem not to go well, even when that happens, we can hope that the gittin issues will not be complicated, that we'll all find ways to come together in good ways and to separate in good ways when we have to. And that is a responsible day for the 29th of Tammuz, the Bach and Shlomo Roth on problems with gittin. Have a great day.